I am Harriet Tramer, your host for Reaching for the Gold, and I'm glad that you tuned into my show this afternoon and hope that you will join me every other Tuesday afternoon at this time when Reaching for the Gold is broadcast. My guests today are both committed to helping caregivers. Dr. Stephen Verrett, a Pennsylvania State University professor, supports them by researching what resources such as daycare centers can best help them manage their stress. Kathy Penahara, meanwhile, is more direct in her approach. A home health care aide, she helps these caregivers deal with the responsibilities they have assumed. You indicate, or you've studied, how caregivers feel a great deal of stress. Can you express some of the reasons why that might be the case, why this might be a very stressful thing to do?
Yes, caregivers experience a lot of different kinds of stressors. There are the everyday problems of providing care. If they're helping, for instance, with activities of daily living, there's physical stress that's involved in it. There may be emotional stress if the person they're caring for refuses or argues about the need for help and so on. There are also, for caregivers of people with dementia or with mental health problems, they can be encountering behavior and emotional problems associated with the patient's condition, and that's very difficult to care for. Things like agitated behavior, restlessness, argumentativeness, just the person's depression. Caregivers also may feel a strain between their employment and being responsible for care. They may feel economic strain. And one of the things that often gets overlooked is that there can be an awful lot of family conflict around care, how the caregiver's doing it. You know, other people in the family may be critical of it. Family members may be fighting with each other. And that, in many ways, is one of the most difficult things that caregivers have to deal with.
Now, you talk about the physical stress. Caregivers can be in their 80s, caring for a spouse or whomever. Now, if you had somebody in their 80s caring for a young child or a baby, the thought would be, hey, you're too old. You can't do that. You can't pick up that child. But nobody would think that way or express it to the same extent if they're caring for an older person. So in that sense, it could become very physically taxing.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how many caregivers physically injure themselves, but I'm sure many do in the course of a year.
I have not read any statistics about family caregivers in the home, but I know in nursing homes there's a high rate of injury among caregivers. And also I would think in some instances it can feel very isolating. There's a whole world out there. That's rushing around.
Caregivers do feel cut off. They often find themselves just providing care, and there's nothing left in their lives. They talk about feeling alone, isolated, and engulfed by the caregiving role. That's all that their life has become.
Now, if we do assume, which is pretty obvious, caregivers are facing stress, how can they be helped? How can this stress level be managed?
There are many strategies. There's no lack of solutions. The problem we lack is the willingness to make these more available and more affordable for caregivers. So there are a whole range of things, starting from basic information about how to be a caregiver, about the patient's condition, about what other treatments and services are available, to training in caregiving skills, how do you deal with day-to-day problems more efficiently. So even with very severe problems like agitated behavior of somebody with dementia, that agitated behavior is sometimes treatable, and it's treatable through simple behavioral management strategies that identify what may be causing the problem, and once you can understand what triggers the problem in the first place, caregivers can come up with solutions that help decrease agitation. There are other kinds of...
I'll give an example and what type of management. You have somebody 90, and they're to be going wherever they're to be going. Caregiver, okay, it's time now to get up, get ready, so we can go. Person says, I'm staying in bed, or let me sleep. What would be ways to manage that?
Well, the first thing is you can't win these arguments. And so once the caregiver understands that, the caregiver can take different strategies. Reasoning doesn't work. So you don't say, we're going to go out, and the person, to the doctors, the person says, no, I don't want to go to the doctor. You just say, well, it's time to go out. You start with a very simple thing. Time to get dressed. Let's get dressed. And you do that, and then you say, now I'm going out. You want to come along? Or figure out what will work, and you go out, and you get in the car, or you get in the cab, or whatever it is, and you get them to the doctor's office. But you don't engage in a discussion of trying to convince them that they really want to go to the doctor when they don't. Instead, you get them.
In other words, you might say, I have to go out and run some errands, or I have to go out and do something fun. Why don't you come along with me? And then they just go to the doctor without even discussing it.
I think the particular words that a caregiver would use would depend on the relationship they have with the care receiver and with the history of that relationship. But, yeah, you don't want to. You can't win you can't reason with people, particularly people with dementia, whose ability to reason is impaired. And so you don't say, let's go to the doctor, when you know they'll say no. You say, it's time to go out. And if you say, it's time to go out, we'll do something nice after you go to the doctor, because then that will be reinforcing. It'll encourage them to go out the next time.
Mm-hmm. What you were saying, though, I think it may, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I would think that can be very difficult, because I would think a lot of caregivers, if this is a parent or whomever they've known for their lifetime or years and years and years, if it's a marriage, they love this person. They have respect for their intellect. I think it would be very hard for them to sit there and say, hey, I can't reason with this person. I have to try another tactic. I would think that's a very hard step for them to take. I would think that could be stressful in and of itself.
It can be stressful, and it is hard, but this is where training caregivers in skills, having them go to support groups that emphasize skill building, can be very useful, because they see other people who make this kind of attempt to manage the situation. They see how it works out. They also see that they come to understand that reasoning isn't going to work. Someone's ability to reason is damaged. No amount of reasoning is going to make a difference. And so in that case, we have to adopt the principle of deciding what would be in the person's best interest. And if going to the doctor is in the person's best interest, and that individual can't make the decision for him or herself, we need to take the responsibility for doing it. Now, I'm not saying we should be making decisions for people who are fully capable of making decisions. I would support an older person who says, I don't ever want to go to the doctor again. I don't care. I've lived long enough. Whatever happens, happens. That's fine. But when someone can't make that decision anymore because of cognitive difficulties, and we need to step in, then we need to find ways of helping that person do what he or she would want to do, what the best thing is to do right now in the situation.
Okay, we're talking about stress, and that obviously can mean overload, which can be damaging on a lot of levels, but can't it also be an opportunity to grow when you learn to manage some of these challenges, some of these difficulties? Can't the caregiver feel that they are growing, and in fact they are? Can't it in that sense be a positive?
Sure, but not unless they're learning. And I think the way you said it was very important. Caregivers who are overwhelmed and not getting any help and not getting knowledge about the best strategies to use are going to stay overwhelmed. And so saying, oh, well, there's a bright side to this isn't enough. I think that you're absolutely right that once caregivers get the skills and the knowledge to get a handle on some of the stresses they're facing, they can grow. And they grow not only because of a sense of competence of what they're doing, but because they get a positive feeling from knowing they're doing the right thing for their relatives.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about support. Obviously, the greatest source of financial support in this country is the government. Do you think the government should be doing more to help caregivers, possibly situations where a family caregiver can be paid for their efforts, or might this just confuse the situation?
Well, it's such a difficult issue, and we don't accept the basic principle that everybody should have health care. Most advanced economic systems in Western Europe and in Asia have national long-term care programs. The U.S. doesn't. Of course, we should be paying for it. I've seen figures where two-thirds of all people who have severe disabilities that warrant nursing home care are actually living in the community with a family caregiver. We should be supporting them in a systematic way. Instead, most caregivers get very little help from the government or from anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think, I know some of your research I've read indicates the great value of daycare centers. Could you describe that a bit? What could be the value of my elder going to a daycare center if I'm a home family caregiver?
The value both to the caregiver and to the person who goes. But let me start with the caregiver. The first thing is you suddenly have free time where you were previously providing care or at least vigilant that you needed to be there in case something happened. So that gives you a break. That break translates, and this is what our research shows, into improved emotional well-being for the caregiver. And also what we're seeing in recent work is that we see improvements in biological markers of stress. Many of the listeners have probably heard about cortisol, which is described as the stress hormone. It's part of our immediate response to stress. And with chronic stress, cortisol can either become excessively high or excessively low, and both of those conditions lead to increased risk of illness and death. What we found is that when caregivers send a relative with dementia, so we're talking about fairly demanding care situations, relatives send a person to an adult day service program, on those days, cortisol becomes better regulated. If they had high elevated cortisol it comes down. If they had a low, burned out chronic stress pattern, cortisol comes up. So we see this regulation of cortisol that is likely protective of the caregiver's long-term health.
Mm-hmm. Now, mightn't...
Be sure to register your copy of Sam at www.spatialaudio.com. You'll feel warm and squishy inside once you do.
Help you get through some of the very rough circumstances of caregiving.
Some adult-based service programs have support groups, and if not, the caregiver should now have the time to be able to go to a support group.
Mm-hmm.
Because the relative is going to daycare.
Now, a difficult question is if, well, they're all difficult, but this one, very thorny. What would you say to someone who has, I'll say, a parent, 90, they never really got along with that parent, that parent was very difficult, they've become even more difficult. How can they handle that situation if they become a caregiver? They're overwhelmed. They, you know, feel a sense of being put upon, quite possibly. If they don't, they feel guilt. How can somebody handle a situation like that, where possibly even a parent was, if not physically abusive, psychologically and emotionally abusive? They're now 90. They're difficult. They always were. How could somebody handle a situation like that?
Every caregiver has to ask, what am I willing to do? There's no set obligation. And if they decide that this, they just physically and emotionally can't do it for whatever reason, but certainly if their relationship with the parent was never good, then they turn to institutional care for the parent. This is a very difficult decision, as you've explained it, but each caregiver has to know the limits of what he or she is able to do. It may be, I simply can't do care for this person, or I can do care up to a certain point, and beyond that, I know I won't be able to do it. And knowing this helps caregivers feel like they're making a willing decision to do whatever it is they want. One caregiver in a support group that I led many years ago said that what she got out of the group was knowing that she would know when the decision came when she needed to put her husband in a nursing home. And when it did come, and she was emotionally ready for it because she knew it wasn't an open-ended commitment. That wasn't what she was able to do, but it was a commitment to carry out the caregiving for as long as she could physically and emotionally manage it. And she knew when she reached that point and felt good about than making the decision.
And what happens when, I'm going to make example, two spouses are sharing caregiving and a third spouse, and maybe they have their reasons, is simply not at all involved in that. How can a family handle that? It might be very natural for the two people who are involved to feel a sense of abandonment. Do they just have to say, look, I'm doing what's right, and this person is doing what they're doing, and go on? Or what might be some ways of handling a situation like that?
Okay, I think you meant siblings, right?
Yes.
Not spouses, siblings. Well, that often happens, and sometimes siblings may just geographically be too far away to help on a regular basis. But when we've worked with families over the years, We try to get everybody together and find out what each person could do. And if somebody says, I simply don't want to, my relationship with mother or father is too bad, and they're not willing to do anything, well, everybody else has to decide that's, you know, we have to carry on. Sometimes, though, we can find a task that the unwilling person is willing to do. So that person may not want to visit, but may be willing to manage financial matters or manage something else that doesn't involve contact. So if each person can take a role, that's one way of dividing up responsibility in a family. It's not always possible, but we found that often there are things that each person is willing to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, traditional gender roles have had the woman doing most of the caregiving, if not all the caregiving. Do you find that changing over time? Are men doing a larger share of caregiving?
Yes. Each national survey of caregivers shows an increasing proportion of men who are doing the bulk of the care. And it's not situations anymore where it's just a husband taking credit for what his wife may be doing, but where they're actually the primary caregiver. You know, we have smaller families, and not every older person has daughters anymore, and more sons are stepping up.
Dr. Zaret, thank you very much. You have a great deal of information on these matters. If somebody would like to read some of your studies or obtain some of the information you have because they think it would be helpful, how can they do that?
With some of the things I've written are listed on my faculty webpage at Penn State University. That if they go to the Penn State website, they can search for my name and they'll find some links to the papers.
Thank you very much. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harry, and it's a pleasure to be here.
You work as a home health care aide. What are some of the duties that you assume or any home health care aide might assume?
Well, with most of the homes that you go into, they pretty much have a different agenda for each person. You know, it depends on the case that you're working with. It can be anywhere from light housekeeping to just sitting with their loved one or doing some light laundry, things of that nature. And, you know, you just go by what the person's looking for. If you, in some cases, you have to maybe give meds, and most families will set that up so that, you know, you don't make any mistakes, and they're right there in little pill boxes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what mostly is entailed with that.
How long have you been doing this work?
Well, I got started, I'd say, about 20 years ago when my husband became ill. He had cancer, and I had hospice come in, and I'll tell you, it just opened my eyes to a whole new outlook on life, and I saw the importance of it. I don't know, it just grabbed me in a way that I just knew that if I had the chance, I would want to do something to try to help somebody, and it just makes you feel good when you do that.
Now, what are some of the major fulfilling aspects of your work? What might make you go to work, come home, and say, hey, I did something today that was really meaningful? What are some examples of that? When
well,
might that happen?
I think one of a very important one is when you can bond with someone and they look forward to you coming after being such a stranger walking into their home, and you reach them in a way that, you know, just by talking to them, that you don't even realize it's happening. But if you try to put yourself in their position, or at least see where they're coming from, it's very rewarding and meaningful that, you know, you've made them happy in some way, and at least try to give them a better quality of life while they're going through the process that they're going through with their illness.
Okay, we've discussed what's fulfilling. Now mm-hmm. we come to the obvious question.
Okay.
How is it challenging? By challenging, I mean someday you don't come home and say, hey, I really feel fulfilled. You come home and say, why am I doing this?
Well, a lot
why
of people
don't
said
I
that
do something else?
Yeah, a lot of people have said that to me, but Harriet, to be honest with you, I have looked at the world of geriatrics knowing that I'm going to be in that position someday, and if there's some way, somehow, I could make it better for someone, because so many people are lonely, so many people need help, that it just, the frustration seemed to go away. I mean, there are days where maybe they seem longer than the other day, but and maybe the next day's easier or hardest. It's you never know. Every day is different. But the biggest part is just getting to know the person you're with and understanding, you know, why they feel the way they do, and when they seem like they can't change what's happening to them. So you have to just look at that and see, well, what can I do to make it better? You know, and if you do that, you know what, you feel better, because it shows on that person maybe the next time you come to visit with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the frustration seemed to go away for me.
I think what I hear you saying is when you go in and
mm-hmm.
you work with an older person,
mm-hmm.
you need to understand that they are also feeling some frustrations.
Absolutely. You're coming into their home. You're a stranger. They don't know you or anything about you, and it's like it's hard for them. And I try, my biggest way with people is I try to sit down, ask them if I can sit down. I just don't go into a home and do something because I know I'm there to work for the family. But I talk to the individual that I'm taking care of because they're still a person. They need love, they need understanding, and they need compassion. They may not show that, but that's where you come in, and you have to know that in your mind. You know, this is why I'm here, and I'm going to do my best to try to, you know, make them feel comfortable with me. So, you know, that you can help them, and you'll get them, believe me, you'll get them to open up, and before you know it, they'll be asking you questions, so it isn't always easy, but I feel if you're kind and you're courteous and understanding, you will help that individual more than ever. So,
mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of how you manage to make somebody feel comfortable with you?
Well,
where you had to work on it?
There are a lot of times... I think with every person that you meet, because when you go into a client's home for the first time, I like to meet with the family and have them present. And instead of talking to the family, talk to the person, you know, that's ill. And sure, there's a lot of times you can't do that, especially if it's a patient, say, with dementia or Alzheimer's. But you still have to talk to them in a kind way and just show them that you're there to help them, not you know, diminish them in any way. People are
mm-hmm.
people, and you have to talk to the person. You really do. It's the best way to reach them if you can, you know,
now,
that illness.
You obviously have a great deal of experience in elder care.
Yes.
A lot of times, family caregivers don't have that resource. They're put in this position. All of
yeah.
a sudden, they turn around, and their mother, their father, their spouse, whomever it is in need of special care, either
yes.
because of their physical or mental situation. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to present some circumstances that they might encounter and see what hints you have in helping them to
mm-hmm.
to deal with it.
Okay. Sure.
We to make, you know, kind of start with the hard one and get a little easy.
Okay.
As you obviously realize, somebody has dementia, they may not remember anyone or a part of their mind isn't working that day and they don't remember. What do you do when this is your loved one, whomever it is, and they look at you and say, why are you in my house? This is my house, not yours. Why are you here? When they just don't recognize you and get belligerent, how can you handle a situation like that? That's very, very difficult.
That is difficult. It's extremely difficult because it's very painful to you that there it is, your loved one doesn't remember you.
And it's getting accusatory and belligerent. It happens.
Yes, it does happen, yes. All I can tell you is that you have to just keep going over it and over it and over it again with saying reminders of things that have happened, or maybe a name, something that they would pick up on, a picture, just a hug, you know, any of those things that could try to, for that fleeting moment, get their mind to think or to remember, because it does happen. I have a situation with a friend right now that's going through that with her mother. Her mother has never forgotten her, and I think it's because she is there on a daily basis telling her mother, Mom, I love you, and just talking to her like she doesn't have this horrible disease of the mind that's taken away all her memory. So seeing her and helping her with that and watching that for 3 years now, mind you, she doesn't know me, and she did know me, but she doesn't. But I just keep saying my name, and I talk to her like I'm talking to you. And it's surprising. Sometimes I'll get an answer, and it's the greatest thing that can happen or you could feel. So you just have to keep familiarizing your loved one in a situation. If you can have them at home, that's very, very helpful, because once they're taken out of that, I mean, it's another whole different atmosphere for them. They're lost as it is. We don't know what they're thinking. We don't. I've seen that over and over, and it's about loving, caring, and giving. And if they get belligerent and start swinging and hitting, striking out at you, you have to be able to control yourself and realize that, hey, this is the illness, not my mother or my father.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Understand it's the illness.
Yes, that's the biggest part.
Now, if you have a picture of yourself and them, would it help to say, that's you, look at the picture, and that's me, to help them maybe connect a bit, or?
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Talk about, show them their mother's picture. Show you, because you don't know what little one word or one picture or maybe, anything, a statue, anything in the house that they liked that can make them think for that one split second and remember it. Absolutely. That would be great.
Now, what can you do if you're caring for somebody who possibly has Alzheimer's or dementia or just is having a very rough time and it's time for them to get up and eat and they say, I'm not getting up? How can you handle a situation like that? Come back in 5 minutes. You don't confront them.
No, don't ever do that, because trying to push or force something on someone, you just try to change the subject. You sit there very patiently. You might say, oh, I'm going to have a bite of my sandwich. Do you want to try this of yours? You know, if not, they say no, then just wait a while, you know. But eventually, I mean, I've been very lucky. I've worked with many patients that had that, and they come around eventually. They really do, but there will be times when they won't. They give up. And, you have to. You can't force it. You just can't.
I suppose you would have to, if you have somebody in their 80s or even their 90s, I suppose you would have to remember that they must be pretty sturdy or they wouldn't be around. And if they don't eat at 12 noon because that's when you have lunch scheduled,
you go back.
They'll make it through.
Sure, you go back. I mean, you can't have a set schedule sometimes just because it's convenient for for you, or, you know, you try to feed them when they, if they won't eat at 12 noon, then hey, try at 12:30 or try at 1 o'clock. But little bits of food sometimes, several times a day, goes a lot further than just trying to make a person eat at a particular time that doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, and give them their favorite things, you know, things that you might know from the past that they loved, and you'd be surprised how it comes back. So
all these things that you tell me seem to indicate that you have to be very flexible yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And that's hard.
It is hard. I mean, there's times I go I go over just to help my friend, and, you know, I may have a splitting headache or something, but I'm going to forget about what I'm going through and just walk in there and try to be, you know, cheerful. And it's not always easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but I think little by little you learn these things, and you know, hey, I can walk in there, but I'm going to have so many hours there, and then I'm going to leave. And, you know, when you have someone that can't do that, that needs that break, you know, you got to focus on them. So it ends up making you feel better. It really
does. Now, as you obviously know, there's an ongoing trend in our country towards aging at home, keeping somebody at home if it's at all possible. Now, that's wonderful, but have you encountered, or do you think there are instances where somebody just takes that maybe a step too far? This person has physical problems, whatever it is, that are just not handled very easily at home, particularly by somebody who does not have considerable nursing or medical training. Have you encountered situations you thought were inappropriate for home care? Do you find that happening more and more?
I have not. I've found it to be the opposite. I've found that a lot of people that, say, have a loved one that needs the home care find it a bit easier if they get a little bit of help. By help, I mean learning, going to agencies that can give them the proper, you know, little bit of a class, so to speak, as to what to expect and what not to expect. I think those facilities are wonderful. I've not encountered anybody even being in a home where I thought it was a threat to that patient. But if I did, I would certainly, you know, speak to the person in charge, and let them know why I would think that or feel that way if I thought it'd be better that they'd be somewhere else. But I think most people that are at home are their happiest because they're in that familiar surrounding, and it helps them, you know, get through the remainder of time that they have left.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you seen situations, and I suspect they're very common, where you have a couple that's very close, one member of that couple is trying to care for the other, and it just isn't happening because they're not physically or mentally capable of doing that? Have you encountered much of that type situation?
I had a couple that, in fact, I still have the one where I'm taking care of the wife because the husband did pass. And, you know, they couldn't take care of one another because of one's illness being one thing and the other. But their comfort came by both being there in the home together and having someone come in. It wasn't always, you know, open the door and everything was great. But that would be the only experience that I had, and I think it made it a lot easier on both of them, yes, because they had, you know, 40-some years, 50 years of marriage, and they're, all of a sudden, their life is changing. So I've had that kind of an experience, but again, it helped, I think, because they both were at home, and they were able to get the care that they needed, and they couldn't do it for one another. So that's the great thing about home health care, when you can hire an agency and have someone come in that you get to know and trust that can help with the situation, and it really makes their life a whole lot easier.
Now, you said you've been doing this work for, I believe, 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have the type of patients you encounter changed, and the type of situations you encounter changed over those years? Are you getting people who are older, 100, or?
Well, I've had them, Harriet, all ages. Believe me, my youngest being 62. And then all the way up to 98. So. That's a big span, but I don't see a lot of younger people, like in the 40s or so. No, I don't, because good for them, they're healthy, but or maybe their circumstances don't, need that. But I would say it's usually an age group of anywhere from 60 to close to 100, yes. That's the biggest amount as far as ages that I've seen.
And are you noticing, as the trend towards aging at home increases, that the people are more in need psychologically or physically than was once the case? Are
most
these boundaries
of the cases,
being stretched?
No. Most of the cases are because of an illness like cancer or heart or dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's, yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's been the case all along.
Yes. Those are the biggest factors, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, turning it a bit to the personal, has being a home health care aide led to your changing your personal views towards aging? Has it made you frightened to age? Has it made you less frightened? Has it made you think this is just a natural process and nothing to fear? How has it changed your personal views?
Well, I'll definitely go with the latter. I think that it's made me think that, you know what, this is, you live your life and it will come to an end. And I think how you live your life helps you towards the end of your life, if that makes sense, because if you're happy most of the time, you know what? You're not going to fear death. I don't have, for myself personally, I have no problem with facing death. Maybe about 20 years ago, if you asked me that, I'd be like, oh, I'm kind of afraid. But I don't think so. I just think that what I've learned from getting older is that I hope, if I have to have someone in my life to take care of me, that I can be accepting like I truly trying to find with people today that I meet. So, I know that could happen. And, you don't want to put the burden on your children, but yet, somehow, some way, you have to rely on somebody. It could happen. And you have to try to be more accepting with that. So I don't have a fear of it. No, I don't. It just, there's a lot of good people out there that are willing to put themselves out and help you. It's just finding the right individual. And not everybody that comes as a home aide, health aide is maybe the best that you could get. But they sure need enough schooling on it, because it's the simplest little things that you could learn are the ones that are truly the most important. It's caring and giving of yourself and respecting the person you're with, instead of talking down to them or telling them that they must do something. If you learn that, you're going to go a long way in caring for somebody, because they're going to give you that right back. They're going to give it back to you in a way that shows that they're happy that you're there when you walk through that door.
Now, if I need to hire a home health care aide for a family member, what are some things I should look for? Should I look for their credentials? Should I look for how they relate to my family member? What should I look for?
Well, both of those are great things. There are, you know, I work for an agency. We're bonded. We go and get fingerprinted. And I think that's all well and good because you hear horror stories, but that doesn't mean it always happens, you know, from a person that isn't bonded or fingerprinted. It's just the individual. You really should interview the person. You need to sit down and talk with them, even if it's more than once, before you make a decision. Because I think if you can sit and talk to a person and really see where they're coming from, they're going to be just about what you would want or expect for them to take care of your, you know, loved one. So it doesn't hurt to check them out, no, not at all. And references. References are great, you know. It's not an easy world out there with a lot of things that go on, but there are a lot of good people out there, and I've been very lucky, and I've always respected and grew to love the people that I've worked for. Believe me, they you become close to them and you care about them, so that's a great reward.
Kathy, thank you very, very much for being on the show, and I would like to remind all my listeners that we are on every other Tuesday afternoon at this time, so be sure to tune in. And for more information on aging, go to my website, htramer.com. That's htramer.com. And thank you for listening.